I call your name.
Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Jessica.
And this is episode 115 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Good evening. Hello. Happy February.
Yeah. So you may have noticed we're like a once a month podcast.
We're trying not to be, but it's
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. Your schedule changes all crazy. Every week. And I'm okay with that.
All right, we'll do what we can.
Yeah.
So we both went to Madrona.
Yeah. So why don't you tell you were there for much longer than I was.
I did. I didn't do that much.
But how was your weaving class?
Oh, it was really good. So I was there Thursday through Sunday, and I took an all-day class on Thursday, which was a log cabin weaving sampler on a rigid head of loom with Deborah Jarko is how you pronounce her name. Okay. She also has classes on Craftsy, which I actually went ahead and purchased her rigid head of weaving beyond the basics because it covers not only what we did in our class, but then a bunch of other techniques
like pickup sticks and stuff.
Yeah. Pickup sticks. I bought that a long time ago
and watched part of it and then stopped using it.
But so it was a good class. I mean, it was pretty straightforward, where we just did a basic setup to do a log cabin pattern, tried various sizes of patterning on the log cabin. And then she had us weave that sampler, cut it off, and then take the four center warp threads. I'm trying to hold up four fingers, but I'm being very unsuccessful. Four center warp threads. And then, just invert them so that swap the lights and the darks, just on those four threads, and then weave the exact same pattern we did the first time.
Okay.
And it's a pretty dramatic difference in the two samples. But yeah, it was good practice. And
interesting.
Someone else was saying she made you cut it off, but it was good because then, you had to practice tying it back on, getting the tension right, weaving your header again and just getting started nice and square because log cabin, if you're not nice and square to start with, the pattern doesn't look very good or, kind of veers in a very obvious way if you're not, if you haven't started out on the right foot.
So there's a reason that she had you guys.
It was definitely very useful. She's a very knowledgeable instructor, very easygoing, really comfortable with the material. And definitely lots of different levels of experience. There were a lot of people in the class who were really inexperienced rigid heddle weavers, but were very experienced floor loom weavers.
Oh,
so, but it is quite a different beast, just the whole process of it. So it was easygoing. It was fun. I learned a few things. It just kind of reminded me of weaving. Yeah. That's something I like to do. And then the rest of the time was just hanging out with my friends.
Nice.
Just doing a
bunch
of nothing.
I saw you for I was telling you when you got here, 2 seconds.
Yeah, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I definitely did a bunch of shopping at the marketplace this year.
Oh, yeah,
what'd
you get?
Well, I would say my impression of the marketplace, or maybe it was just the things I was noticing, is this is the year of Targi. Targi as a sheep breed. Somewhat similar in quality to Merino. It's fine, it's short, it's crimpy. But there was tons of Targi spinning fiber in the marketplace. I'm not shopping for spinning fiber because I have so much. But lots of finished yarns, too. So I bought... Abstract was selling these giant double skeins of sock yarn called Chihuly. So it was 730 yards or something. That was a Targi, 80-20 Targi silk.
Oh, cool. I didn't go into her booth. I think every time I went, walked by, there were tons of people in there.
Yeah. And they do really, really intense colors. So I got it in a really, really deep, rich, vivid kind of navy, just very deep blue.
Pretty.
And it's a really beautiful skein. And then Brooke from Sincere Sheep had posted on Instagram that she was going to be bringing a new Targi blend with her. Mm-hmm. And I got to her booth and I'm like, where's the new yarn? And she's like, oh, well, I have this other new yarn, which was her sock blend. She said, I don't have room. And I was like, oh, okay. I was interested in seeing if that's all right. She's like, no, come here, come with me. So she walked me back down the secret back hallway and let me just paw through all of the bins. So she had, hers was also an 80-20 Targi silk, which she had in both a DK and a worsted.
Oh.
So I bought one skein of each.
She's holding out on me.
You gotta have the secret password. Yeah. And I think I'm going to get the yardage wrong, but the DK was around 325 yards for a single skein. And then the worsted was I want to say like 250-ish, something like that. So definitely like more than enough in a single skein to do a decent project. She was saying someone had used the worsted, one of her assistants, I think, had used the worsted to knit a cabled hat and had enough left over to do a cabled baby hat as well. Just one skein of the worsted.
Matchy matchy.
Yeah. So I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but...
I'm curious to see
And
that.
I know I saw on Instagram, I know you went to Brooke's booth too.
I always spend lots of time at Brooke's booth. One, I really like Brooke as a person.
Yes, definitely.
And I was telling the group of people that I was
Your
there.
Your entourage.
Yeah. I was telling the group of people I was with that I have been purchasing yarn from Brooke since she was still Tactile Fiber Arts.
Yeah, no kidding.
At the first Madrona I ever went to.
Right.
So I'm really glad that she still comes.
Yeah.
And, you know, she always has interesting stuff. Ended up with 3 skeins of her Cormo fingering to use with some of her Equity fingering that I bought over the past several years for a sweater.
Oh, cool.
So I'm swatching for a colorwork sweater.
Fun.
Yeah. It's bright. Yeah. I like it.
So I can't remember if I got any other stuff. Oh, I did. I got more Targi. So I knit the Solitude Wool Targi worsted that I bought last year at Madrona.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like a whole skein left over. So I thought, I'll get a second skein and I'll do something in 2 colors.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought another skein of that. But basically I came home with just a bag and everything I purchased was Targi. I got one little mini skein in a bright yellow from Canon Hand Dyes because I thought it would be good to add a little punch of color to my leftovers cowl.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm also going to use it. I've got it right here, actually, which I'm using on my...
Oh, I was going to say, when you showed me this bag, I was like, what
that
are you doing with yellow?
I know. Well, I bought it because I thought it would... So right now, I'll tell you in a little bit what I'm working on.
Yeah.
But, and then Kathy gave me some other color, some other. So I've already had people offering me their, like, I'll give you bright sock yarn scraps. But yeah, I think that was everything I got. What else did you get besides the Sincere Sheep?
So I got the Sincere Sheep, and that's Cormo. And I got a skein of the Local Color Fiber Studio that Church Mouse has.
Oh, yeah.
Special, that Local Color Fiber Studio. Hi, Emily. Hi, Tatiana. did for Church Mouse, and I got it in the yellow color. It's really pretty and squishy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a skein of the Sportweight Pygora from Michelle Tetzelblanc.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
From her, I don't know what, it's like 250 yards, so it's enough to do a nice little accessory with.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what I bought.
That's good.
It was.
And then you just kind of zinged in for the day with your entourage.
Yeah, my sister was up, and she bought some stuff. Like, not that much. She actually went to Stitches the next weekend.
I was
going to
say, I saw her on Facebook that she was at Stitches.
Because she, the last time she went was with me. Like, when I went the last time was, like, 3 years ago, 2 years ago or something. And I was like, did you see anybody? You know? And she said, no. I said, maybe they were all at the podcaster meetup. We should have gone to that. She was there on Saturday, so... I felt bad. Our youngest sister was supposed to go with her, and she's a new knitter, and something came up. She couldn't go at the last minute, so she ended up going by herself, but she was okay with it.
She's a big girl. She's okay.
Yeah. It's just fun with people.
Mm-hmm.
So that is Madrona.
Yeah.
It was fun. And then my next non-knitting group thing is the Northern California Knitting Retreat in April.
Right.
Very excited. All the stuff is booked, so we have our hotel. I'm going down actually on Thursday and staying in San Francisco overnight and then driving down.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to buy fabric when I'm in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So that's a plan. I'm excited for it. Mm-hmm. And then just to hang out. I'm excited. And then I wanted to talk about the knit along. We didn't have a name last time.
That's right.
And it's the Inspired by Knit Along, and that's to knit anything that is inspired on, based on, or inspired by, or based on books, movies, TV shows, anything like that. I started February 1st. We have some finishers already.
Yeah, some people are really excited about it. It seems like there's going to be a high prevalence of Harry Potter
Yeah, lots of socks, I think, too.
I think, yeah, there's just a lot of, there's already a lot of patterns out there for Harry Potter, and mine is Harry Potter inspired, too.
And it goes to April 30th, and if you want to, you can use the hashtag DKIBKAL.
Yes.
Double knit. Inspired by.
K-A-L.
Yes. On social media. That's what I'm tagging my stuff with. So what are you knitting?
Well, I am knitting the elf cap from the Interweave publication, the unofficial Harry Potter Knits, which was also published as a book called Knitting Wizardry, and it's by Kendra Nitta, and or Nita. It'd be better if her name was Nitta. N-I-T-T-A. Because she's a Nitta.
She's a Nitta.
And it is the idea of the hat. It's a very silly hat, so I've always liked it. The idea of it is that Hermione knits hats for the house elves as part of the organization SPEW, which is the Society for, I can't remember, anyway, it's for the welfare of, or like elf, something elf welfare. But so she knits all these hats so the hat is meant to look like you're wearing five hats that like stacked on top of each other. So the effect is created through short row shaping so that you get like, you knit like the ribbing, but you put short rows in it so that it's sort of higher on one side than on the other. And then you knit like a little stripey hat that has a rolled edge, but they're all connected as a single hat.
That's a pretty ingenious little pattern.
It's a really cute little pattern. It looks like it's a lot of fun to knit. I'm on only the hat number 2 in the stack of 5, where it's a stockinette, like, rolled edge hat, and then it has stripes in it, and then there's a hat that is cabled, like, the third layer hat is cabled, and then there's a different ribbed hat in there, and then the final hat is, like, a pointed stocking cap with a pom-pom that has a little band of color work in it.
Oh, cool. So you got lots of techniques in there, like shoulders, cables, stripes.
Yeah, it is kind of a really loaded down pattern with a lot to do. And just these little chunks. And it uses scrap fingering weight yarn, which I love to do that. So that's perfect for me. And then you're working in your inspired by.
Which is the chevron stripe cowl by Knitterella or Jill Zielinski that I bought at Stitches West the last time I went. Mm-hmm. And it's my Twin Peaks inspired thing because it's big chevrons and stripes. I need some serious blocking here. But it's colorwork chevrons alternating with colorwork stripes. And it takes 4 different colors of fingering weight yarn. So I'm using, this is Baby Ole and Blue Moon Fiber Arts Lightweight, and then 2 skeins of hazelnuts. So it's black, white, it's called beach glass, like a turquoise blue, and a bright red that's poppy.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
It's like, the red is the curtains, the black and white is the chevron floor, and then the blue is like the uniforms at the diner that the waitresses wear, so...
Fun.
And I'm like naming the sections, and I was like, you're so weird, why are you doing that? I was like, this one is cherry pie at the R&R diner. This one is that gum you like is coming back into style.
Good.
I'm enjoying it.
I was watching looking at the conversation on the Ravelry group, and some people are being so creative with their ideas.
Yeah.
And I had to sort of like just think really hard, like, well, what's my favorite movies? And one of my very favorite movies is Annie Mame, and Rosalind Russell wears so many amazing costumes in it, and also the set decoration is sort of a huge part of it, because she, each time, like, she keeps going through these different phases, so the apartment gets redecorated, and she gets a whole style overhaul, so her hair is always a different color and a different style of her clothes, but... I was remembering that in the very opening scene of it, she is wearing this lacy bodysuit with a big, big shrug thing with it. But, and I kept looking for stills online where you get like a shot of what the lace pattern is like mm-hmm. on the bodysuit. Cause I thought, oh, I could do that as a color work pattern, but I can't quite see it. There's another scene though, toward the end of the movie where she's wearing this whole like glittery silver costume. And she's just got this enormous, enormous pashmina. That's just this very lightweight, screaming bright lime green that has Ooh. Like silver beading on the yeah. edges. And I thought, oh, I can interpret that into knitting. Or I was even thinking like I could maybe weave something.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would count for the knit along to weave something, but yeah, I can't quite land on it, but I did have this Harry, I mean, there's a lot of things in this particular magazine, this Harry Potter Knits that I've wanted to knit for a long time.
And you love scrap projects?
I do love scrap projects. It did really cool. And it's a hat. I mean, it's like everything I love, right? Using up scraps, knitting hats. But I was just sort of feeling like, oh, I should be a little more creative and kind of venture off on my own. But not like yeah. there's anything wrong with the way
I think I forgot to mention that this is a tube cowl.
Oh, yes.
So you do color work in the round, and there's a big chunk of the zigzags are color work, but then the stripes are just stripes. And once you get the pattern, because it's a graphic pattern, once you get it set up, it's actually really easy to do. I've been, yeah. like, knitting it on the bus and stuff, because you just have to make sure the chevrons line up.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty easy peasy. Yeah. I'm using a 5, even though the pattern called for a 4, because, like I said, I forgot the 4.
I was searching.
I lost the 4.
I was searching for the needles for this hat today, and pulled out my leftovers cowl, just because I know that one. Like, I think it called for 3, and I thought I was knitting it on a 4. It turns out I'm knitting it on a 6. What? So, I don't know. I mean, not like there's a specified gauge for a color work right. cowl, but I'm just, like, really puzzled by it. And I even went to my Ravelry page for it, and I had written down that I was using a 4. Hmm. So I must have, like, pulled 2 needles out, like, you're the 6 and you're the 4, and somehow started it on the wrong needle.
Yeah, I couldn't find my 4, so I was just like, well, 5 is fine. Yeah. It'll just use up a little more yarn, and I have full skeins of everything. So, yeah. Actually, I have a ton of baby wool, so mm-hmm. I'm not worried about running out. But I'm really enjoying seeing everyone's pictures.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Here, should I just tell you what else I'm
yeah,
knitting?
Yeah, tell me what else you're knitting. I feel like I've barely seen you since
I know. Like, last I haven't. Recorded. Definitely true. You barely see me. Let's see. I knit the Opium Hat, which is by Natasha Sills.
I haven't seen you for a month and you're tired of drugs.
Opium. Yeah, exactly.
Jessica.
And that used up the very last bit of the same gray Imperial stock that I used for Trickster the last time.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started one night knitting my... So I have all these skeins of super bulky yarn. Some of it's self-striping. Some of it is stuff that I've overdyed that I've just been collecting for a long time. And I wanted to do some kind of a blanket. And I thought about maybe mitered crosses. But then I just sort of decided, like, I'm just going to do log cabin. So all I started doing right now is just knitting the centers of what will become the squares. So I'm just casting on random numbers of stitches and just knitting a chunk, whether it's a rectangle or a square or whatever. And then I will, you know, using log cabin technique, make them all the same finish size. I've done a few centers on that, not a lot. I thought my Madrona project would be a shawl by Asa Tricot called Nontropo, which is done with like a solid lace weight and kitzel case that's done in stripes. It's striped, but then there's also like
a sweater. Or
it's
something?
Oh, sorry, it's a shawl.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay,
sorry. I thought I said
maybe you did. I was kind of out of it today.
It's so. And I thought, oh, this will be my Madrona project because it's stripes and you're just sort of increasing it, that, you know, that basic shawl mm-hmm. start kind of thing. And I cast on in the kitzel case and then I realized this will be the worst Madrona project ever because it's really difficult to see.
Maybe
really good lighting. It's dark colored, fuzzy kitzel case. And at least until the pattern's established, it was a terrible idea to try to bring to Madrona.
And I mean, in theory, it was good.
Yeah, but yeah. I cast on, I knit, like, the first row, and then I set it aside, like, you are not coming to Madrona with me. And I didn't want to bring leftovers because, you know, I need to look at a chart while I'm knitting it. I need to carry around 18 little skeinlets of yarn. Yeah. So I cast on instead for Foolproof by Louise Zaz Bangham, which I've wanted to knit for ages. And I did that in two skeins of hand spun fingering weight. One is like a Shetland Merino blend, and the other I think is Merino silk. Really old hand spun of mine. And it is such a clever cowl. It looks like it was just, it's just knit flat. I mean, it kind of is like on the bias where you have all like varying stripe sizes. On one section you have, more even stripes, and another section you have bigger chunks of one color and thin stripes of another color. But the way it's actually knit, I guess she wrote it as a mystery. And when you buy the pattern, it still says like clue one, clue two, clue three. So you start by casting on a single stitch and then increase up as if you were knitting a triangle, like a traditional triangular shawl.
Mm-hmm.
And basically once the spine of the triangle, the depth of the triangle, is the width that you want for your cowl,
mm-hmm.
you stop, put half the stitches on a holder, and then continue knitting on the bias on the other side.
Ooh.
And then when it's half the length that you want, you set those stitches aside.
Interesting.
Pick up the ones you set aside, keep going, and then when you come around on the other side, you put the points together, and it's going to sound really confusing, but the bottom points of the triangle together, and then start knitting across all the stitches again, like those held stitches.
Ooh, I see.
And decreasing down the triangle until you end with a single stitch.
Wow.
So, I know. It's so
clever.
That's
so cool.
You don't cast on. You don't bind off. There's no grafting. It's very
fancy.
Clever pattern. And you can do it in any yarn you want. And the only trick is, and any gauge you want, the only thing to keep in mind is make sure that the, when you're knitting your initial triangle, that the depth of that spine of the triangle is the width that you want your cowl to be. And then you can knit your, make your cowl as long as you want it to be. You can do your own. I mean, I did hers, like when I followed her striping pattern, she's got like a free spirit version where you do any kind of striping you want.
Mm-hmm.
There's some gorgeous ones on Ravelry. Adrienne Basilia, for instance, from Hello Yarn, has done a couple in hand spun. That is sort of vaguely stripey hand spun.
That sounds like it would be like a good project for hand spun.
Yeah, it was. I've got a ton left though. I was hoping to use more of it, but I it's like one of those things where it's like I needed to knit it before I could really understand it. And now I'm like, I could totally see knitting this thing over and over and over again, because most of what you're doing is just knitting garter stitch back and forth, da 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 da.
Interesting.
It's very clever construction. I enjoy her patterns a lot. It is blocking right now. Yeah, and then my elf cap. And that's everything I've been working on.
Mm.
My leftovers cowl is about 30 plus inches long now, so I still got a little ways to go.
I'm working on this, and I'm swatching for that Colorwork sweater. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Okay.
That's what I'm working on. Well, I finished a bunch of stuff. It's all small stuff.
What'd you finish?
I finished, I knit The Little Waiting for Winter Mittens by Susan B. Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
This is like her... She has an adult version and a kid's version, mm-hmm. and it's like baby to kid. And those were super easy. And they're... Audrey has a pile of stuff she didn't put away, so it's probably in the pile. Oh, but here, I had leftovers, so I made her this little cowl. It's Ba La Jolla, I think, is the worsted weight. And I bought it from Sonia at Vogue Knitting Live.
Cool.
So this is, I just did columns of slip stitches.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's really bright.
That is a very...
pink and purple.
A very little girl color.
Yeah. So it was in my stash for a few years. I used all but, like, a super tiny amount of yarn for that little
that
set. And that's the mittens are a $4 download on Ravelry. And it's a straightforward pattern. I mean, I've knit mittens before. It's no surprises. except for the fact that Audrey has freakishly long hands.
She's just a long kid.
She is. Noah said it's like someone stretched her out with a taffy puller.
Yeah.
Like, I think it says knit 2 inches past where you take the thumb gusset off.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't like 3+ inches.
Yeah.
Because she has like long alien fingers.
Yes.
So that was quick. And I also knit her some leg warmers.
Mm-hmm.
So I used Invictus Yarns, that like grapefruit color with the sparkle in it that I had.
Yeah.
I cast on with that, and then I just knit. I did your thing where you just like knit a giant tube.
Oh, and then just cut them where you want them.
Yeah, I used the leftover rainbow trekking or whatever that I had.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I just used the rest of that up and knit another cuff at the end, cut it in half, and knit two more cuffs.
Okay.
And made, like, psychedelic leggings for my kid.
That sounds like fun.
She's very excited.
She should be. Oh, I just knit this off the needle I just borrowed from you. I'm doing the short rows. I'm knitting back and forth, and I'm like,
oops,
not paying attention to what I need to be doing.
Oh, and I finished the Serif cardigan by Elizabeth Doherty, and I actually just tried it on today after it was blocking over the weekend, and the arms grew in length more than I thought, so I need to fix that. But everything else looks really great, and that's my fault. Like, I didn't take that into account, because those garter stitch cuffs were going to grow, and I just, like, just follow the pattern when, obviously, like... Yeah. I didn't think about it. Yes. So that's not the pattern's fault. That's my fault. So I can't decide if I'm just going to snip in the stockinette and like frog some out and then graft it for each one. So I don't have to re-knit the whole garter stitch cuff. But that's a pattern by Elizabeth Doherty from her reimagining
top down
set in sleeves book, which was a great pattern to follow. Like, very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And she has really good advice for fitting sweaters. So I'm excited to wear it. And I think I'm going to choose gray buttons to go with the gray. Because it's in that scummy yellow-green that I like. And gray. And I knit a sock hat, which is just, like, a slightly slouchy hat in sock yarn. Yeah. Very. I just made it up. But I use yarn that Amanda bought me at Fancy Tiger a long time ago. Yeah, Sleep Season Goods, I want to call it. But she's, like, renaming her shop right now. Mm-hmm. So if you search for it, I'm not sure if it'll come up.
Oh.
Apologies. But it was 100% wool. It didn't have nylon in it. So I didn't think it'd be good for socks necessarily. So I was like, I'll just make a hat. And turned out cute. And I knit the Kindling Mitts by Helen Stewart from her...
Oh, from the holiday.
From the holiday one, Knit Vent 2015, the recent one. And I used Kenzie because it had like a partial skein and I had a little bit left over, but it was like the perfect yarn for that because it's like soft and warm and tweedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Helen used something that was like gray with like tweedy flecks in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I still feel like I like got that.
Yes, got that feel.
Yeah, without having to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to use stash yarn. Just because.
Me too.
But they're fun. They're just like little fingerless mitts. They're in two sizes. And they have like little cable pattern on the back of the hand. And reverse stockinette on the gusset, thumb gusset. And then stockinette on the palms. And they're quick knit. And I had... I feel like I started one of her patterns a while ago, and then for, like, I didn't like the yarn or something, so I pulled it out. But I love her, like, percentage chart system thing, the checklist thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for mitts, it's pretty easy because they're so small, but I was like, this is brilliant
when
for, like,
I did
big
Pebble
projects.
Beach, it was, because I did Pebble Beach, the lace weight version, so it's that, yes, it's very nice to have.
It's a nice little, like, yeah, I'm actually 50% done.
Yes.
So, that's what I did.
Cool.
Lots of little things.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that when I finally get my swatch done for that color work sweater, that will take a long time.
Yes.
I'm swatching on a 4.
Well, long time in Aaron version, not like for us mere mortals. I finished my book.
Yay!
This month, because where I've started a book club. Our first book was Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. We had some pretty varied opinions on it. I thought it was entertaining enough. Pretty inconsequential. I think I described it a little bit the last time we recorded that. It's just about, it's set 2040 or 2041, I think. And the world economy is completely tanked and resources are very scarce. And the creator of this whole online world that where everyone spends their time, like think like Facebook, mixed with World of Warcraft, but, like, on steroids, has died and has left instructions that he's left a puzzle behind to solve, and that the person who completes this quest will win his entire fortune, which is some astonishing amount of money, 200-something billion dollars. And it's being narrated by a teenage boy who, you know, like from the very beginning was the first person to solve like the first step in the quest. So, and it's being made into a movie by Steven Spielberg. So that was definitely very present in my mind while reading it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know how they're going to do this, because 99% of what happens in the book happens in this virtual world. And the actual guy, Wade, is like sitting somewhere in a room wearing like goggles and little haptic gloves and, you know, plucking away on a keyboard.
It kind of reminds me of parts of Ender's Game.
I've heard people say that, but I haven't read or seen Ender's Game.
Yeah, so there's this, they're like these kind of video games that are synced to each person to give the people in charge like feedback about their mental state and their capacity for learning and problem solving and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so there's this kind of ongoing video game thing that Ender is playing that, you know, that's like that kind of, except without the money, it's for war.
Right. Well, yeah, so I'm not really sure. And the other thing too, is even just a few pages in, I thought, ooh, the licensing fees on this are going to be murder, because the guy who created the puzzle is supposed to have been like basically my age. So all of his touchstone moments from when he was happy or in his childhood, like in the 80s. So it's a lot of like War Games and John Hughes movies references and Dungeons and Dragons and classic arcade games and Atari games. And it's like this endless amount of name checking in the book, which at first, which I found very irritating on some level, or I found it just not very enriching to the book, but it was interesting talking about it with a group of people at the book club, because for everyone had like their one thing that when they mentioned it, they were like, yes, like the thing that they connected to. So then it's like, okay, well, I suppose it's sort of the like the road all against the wall and see what sticks kind of approach to. I mean, you know, it wasn't like an excellently written book. Our next book is going to be The Sundial by Shirley Jackson.
So that's a crazy one.
Yes. So
that's coming since I've already read the second book.
Yeah, definitely.
That should be crazy.
Yeah.
Bleep. Sorry, kids, if you're listening. But for real, though.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. So that's me. What are you reading?
I read The Red Pony by John Steinbeck, which is a very slim novella. It's like under 100 pages and it's like 70-something. It's about a boy named Jody who lives on a farm in Southern California, like Monterey area. Like many of John Steinbeck's books are set there. And it's a coming-of-age story in the first... like half of the book is about him and this red pony that he gets as a gift, but all the kind of stories that happen, they're kind of separate, but it's all Jody over the span of like a year and a half or so, have to do with loss. So it's not like a coming of age story where something bad happens and then something good happens. It's just like all kind of sad and heartbreaking.
Sounds
and
like Steinbeck.
Yeah. Which I enjoy that. But yeah, after that I felt kind of depressed. I was like, poor Jody. Poor little guy.
Aww.
But it was a good read. And if you like Steinbeck, you'd probably like it. So, and I'm reading The Sound and the Fury. William Faulkner. Let me tell you that I have tried to read this book over the last probably like 10 years. Multiple times.
For me, it's As I Lay Dying. I always pick that one up, read the first 20 pages, and then...
This is the furthest I've made it. Like, 40 pages in. Because the first, like, 30 pages or so skip around, kind of... It's one narrator for the first, like, 30 pages. But it skips around in time and kind of... a little bit narrative voice, so it's very confusing to try and figure out what is actually happening and who people are. But I made it through this first section, and now things are a little clearer, but not much clearer. So, I don't know. I don't know. You guys. I'm not trying to make it through it. And it's not like it's a really long book either.
Yeah. I think someone, maybe it was Sharon on Facebook, had posted a list. You know, there's always the list on Facebook of like, and it was 50 really challenging books. But the way the list was clearly defining challenging meant either challenging in terms of the aesthetic of the book and the way it was written or the narration, or just challenging in terms of the subject matter. Because one of the first books on the list was Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I read The Road, and if this, and The Road wasn't on the list, but this one was, I'm like, how much worse than The Road is that? And I read No Country for Old Men, too, and I loved both of those books. But I was just like, geez, how depressing must Blood Meridian be if it's considered more challenging to read than The Road? Because that is a challenging little book there, I mean, emotionally. And then other things on it that were, like, stylistically challenging, like Finnegan's Wake or War and Peace. But then there were a few things that I was really confused by. Like, one was, like, To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf. And I thought, why is that challenging? Like, it'd be challenging if you read it at the time she wrote it, where you're like, ooh, this is very modern and confusing to me. But as a contemporary reader, I'm just like, I don't understand that one. But, yes. But I don't know if it was Sound... It was some Faulkner was on that list. I'm not sure if it was Sound and Fury. I think it might have been. But
I'm finding it very difficult, and I was trying to talk to Noah about it, but he's not read any, so he's like, yeah, I don't have any patience for, like, Southern men who are sad for themselves. Like, okay, fair enough, whatever, that's fine. But then I didn't have anyone to complain to that it was hard. This is hard to read.
So when you picture when I picture Faulkner, I always picture John Mahoney and Barton Fink, because his character is kind of based on...
Yeah.
On Faulkner when he had his period of, like, attempting to work in Hollywood. And Judy Davis talking about, like, in one of them they made it an idiot man-child. And the studio hated it. So that's... I always picture John Mahoney when I think of Faulkner. Even though I understand he's not... That's not what William Faulkner looked like. That's not him. But that's my brain's little substitution system.
Like, well, now I'll think about that,
too. Yeah, there you go. Sorry.
It's okay.
All right.
I'll go with it.
Okay. So I've been watching things. Yeah, I've been watching things. I watched my Netflix DVD that I have since June. I finally watched Whiplash.
Slow clap.
Yes. Yay. Woo woo. And it was like, when I finally watched it, everyone's like, so how was it? I was like, it was okay. There are no surprise. I mean, if you know what the film is about, it's about a young man who's played by Miles Teller, who is studying to be a jazz drummer, and he his teacher is this very, I can't think of the word, like a word for it, like aggressive, egomaniacal, insane person played by J.K. Simmons, who won the Oscar for it. But it's very by the book, like, you know, teacher is insane, ultra demanding, crazy taskmaster, and student makes himself crazy trying to live up to this idea. Mm-hmm. And as I was watching it, I'm like, I don't really know why J.K. Simmons won an Oscar for this performance, because he's pretty much just playing one note, which is like screaming and crazy. And I feel like really, if anyone deserved an Oscar in this scenario, it's Miles Teller playing the person reacting to all the screaming, because screaming is easy, you know, that's not acting. And
I scream all the time.
Yeah, I scream all the time too. Give me a freaking Oscar. But I mean, I don't want to say, like, it wasn't like a terrible movie, but it didn't hold any real surprises. The arc of the story is exactly what you would imagine it to be. So I was kind of like, and I feel like Miles Teller is really, like, underrated, because his performance is actually quite extraordinary. And he is the lead in the movie. And most of what is happening, like, he is holding his tongue while some crazy person is screaming at him. And you're watching him and kind of feeling what he is feeling. And I think, like, really the person who's doing all the acting there is him. But and then I watched A Most Wanted Man, which I've had on my list forever. And I put it off for a while because it's one of the last films that was released that Philip Seymour Hoffman was in. It came out after he died.
Yeah.
And it is a spy drama in Germany, and I did not care for it. And it's very slow moving, which, of course, like, if you've listened to the podcast at all, I don't have a problem with movies that are very slow moving. I don't have a problem with movies that don't have a plot. It was just so obvious. And when you're watching characters who are supposed to be, like, so clever, and you're just sitting there going, well, duh, this is exactly what's going to happen. And then everything that you know is going to happen happens.
Hmm.
I just found that kind of underwhelming. And Rachel McAdams is in it, and I've said this before, I don't understand why she's famous. I don't think she's a good actress. She's usually, for me, like, a void where someone with talent should go. I don't enjoy her performances. I know she's nominated this year for Spotlight, which I have not seen. So, but in this film, I thought she was super boring, as I always find her to be, a very dull presence. I think you
call her a black hole where acting should be.
Yeah, she's just dull. It's like, I you know, you can imagine any number of other, well, she's also supposed to be playing a German woman, and I'm like, there's so many interesting, electrifying people you could put into this role.
Kate Blanchett, for one.
Anyone. I mean, or any number of younger actresses, you know, they're, and I just find her dull, and so, and I know that's, like, blasphemy, because some people really, really love her, but I find her really boring. I finally watched Dear White People, which has been on my list for forever, because Wes and my older son had both seen it, and they were like, you've got to watch this, which is a very funny comedy about race relations at a fictional Ivy League college, mm-hmm. where a young black woman has a radio show in which she's always including notes of, like, dear white people, like, trying to explain to them, mm-hmm. like, how it is. And we're also looking at the politics within the university, dealing with these issues being brought up about racism at the university, but you're also looking within at the politics within the black community at the university. And it's very sharp, funny movie. Doesn't, you know, not super groundbreaking in any way, mm-hmm. but just really nicely done. A very charismatic cast, and I enjoyed that a lot. That's streaming on Amazon. I don't know if it's on Netflix yet. And then I also watched Ernest and Celestine, which I think got nominated last year. You know how every year for the Oscars there's one animated film that gets nominated?
Yeah.
It's a foreign film that no one has heard of. This was last year's.
Okay.
I think it's a Belgian film, but the version that's available in the US has been redubbed by American actors. And it is about a friendship between a bear and a little girl mouse, and it involves the theft of teeth, among other things. It's a little strange and doesn't, and again, it's one of these ones where there's some weird things going on, but eventually it all just sort of resolves the way you anticipate it will resolve. It's very sweet. The drawing style is very, it looks very hand-drawn. So it's cute, but I didn't find it, like, all very compelling, very interesting. And then we, as a family, went to go see the Oscar, the animated short nominated films,
mm-hmm.
which they usually put together in a package and send around. And then they'll also put in some other things like honorable mentions. And but the one film, one that's really great, that's probably the one that's going to win the Oscar, is the Pixar one, which was which showed before The Good Dinosaur, called Sanjay Superheroes,
mm-hmm.
which is great. It's totally adorable and inventive and really, really fun. It was the short film before that movie, though, that made all the little kids in the theater cry right away, because it's, you know, it's PG, so there's a little, like, intense monster action in that. And watching it again, I was like, gosh, this was really good. It's like very sweet. It's just, the visuals are great. But the one that I think really should win is called The World of Tomorrow, and it's by Don Hertzfeldt, and you can watch it on Netflix as a standalone. It's 20 minutes long, and without giving too much away, it is set in the world of today-ish, where a little girl, like a 4-year-old girl named Emily, is contacted by her like third generation clone of herself to tell her all about what the world is like now for her. And it is, I realize I say this about a lot of movies I like. It is really weird and wacky and totally off the wall and strange and poignant and super funny. And just bizarre, but totally worth watching. And it really, I mean, you can watch it and just enjoy it because it's weird and funny, but it is very poignant and it is very, really exploring the idea of, in a world full of technology, what does it mean to be human? But just a very wacky, very entertaining little movie.
Yeah, I've seen it on Netflix. I
would totally recommend spending 20 minutes watching that.
Great.
And one of the other things I've been watching, so I've been watching just like my regular TV stuff, but the People vs. O.J. Simpson miniseries that Ryan Murphy has made for FX. I've watched the first two episodes. And it's like, man, I didn't realize I still have a lot of feelings about this whole thing. It's kind of funny. Like, I just watched the second episode is all about, like, the white Bronco car chase.
Yeah.
And I have such strong memories about it because when Wes and I flew to Vermont for our wedding, we were standing in the airport in Chicago and, you know, there's TV monitors everywhere showing the news. And the... they had just announced like that, you know, now OJ was a fugitive and their car, and then the video footage of, you know, the live footage of the car being on the freeway. And by the time we landed in Vermont, flying from Chicago, got to Wes's parents' house. When we turned on the TV, it was still going on, you know, we were just I just remember standing in the living room, like, how could this possibly be? And there's just a lot of moments around that case that I just really remember so clearly. And then it dragged on for so long because we got married, and then it was more than a year later that we moved to Seattle, and I remember exactly where I was standing in our rental apartment here in Ballard when the verdict came down on the case. So it really had the whole country just utterly transfixed for, you know, the better part of 2 years.
I have vivid memories of that in high school. That's like half my high school career.
Yeah,
that case.
You know, and it's just very... and it's such a weird cast of characters. I mean, like, you know, God forbid the Kardashians are all mixed up in it. But I mean, like, in that, like, Robert Kardashian was a really good friend of OJ's and was part of his legal team. And anyway, so it's weirdly transfixing to, like, to watch this account of this, of something that I lived through that I have such vivid memories of. And it is such a bizarre chapter in American criminal justice, whatever one may believe is the truth of the case, it still just took so many peculiar twists and turns. It just is a very, but it, so I feel like they're doing a very good job. They're basing it on the Jeffrey Toobin novel, The Run of His Life. So, and it has a lot of interesting background information that maybe, like, you know, I wasn't aware of when the trial was actually happening. Although it did feel like at the time of that trial that there was nothing on TV other than this 24/7 coverage, like court TV.
It's like when the writers went on strike and there was just reality TV forever.
God, right.
Remember that?
That was a bad time.
It was a bad time.
It was. I think that's when I watched the only season I watched of, like, Paradise Hotel. There's nothing else to watch. I don't know.
We are heads in sorrow for that
time. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, culture. What have you been watching?
I saw two movies in the movie theater. What? Yeah, shocker, right?
You gotta stop acting surprised about it now that it's becoming a more regular thing.
Well, Andy gets cheap tickets from work, so I go with her. I saw Pride and Prejudice with zombies.
Oh, yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's a... not very gory, and it's really funny. Like, you know, good fighting, and it's kind of quirky and weird. And Elizabeth Bennett is played by...
Lily James.
Yeah. And I don't remember any of the other actors, except for the guy who they cast as Mr. Collins is really funny. He has really good timing for his jokes. He's like, kind of a buffoon, but, you know, he's also very funny. So, I enjoyed it.
Good.
And I saw The Witch, which I'm still thinking about. Mm.
Okay, so when I saw the trailer for this, mm-hmm. like, I immediately sent it to Aaron.
And I was like, oh,
I was like, I really want you to go see it because I'm too scared to see it, but it looks really interesting and really beautiful.
Yeah, it was really beautifully shot. And it was really interesting.
So it's set in the 1600s,
yes.
right? Like, sort of Puritans in America, and a mm-hmm. family gets
kind they of get booted out of the plantation, which is, like, their walled community. Because the father is not following the teachings of the church as the church interprets them. Or the Puritan elders or whatever. So it's him and his wife and their four kids and she's pregnant. They go out into the middle basically of nowhere. They only like go out and they find this place and they start a farm. And then the woods are bad. You just know the woods are bad. Like they're ominous. Creepy music plays every time, like, the camera pans to them, like, something bad is gonna happen, and the preview made it seem like a different movie than it is.
Oh.
Like, it's a very indie art house kind of movie,
uh-huh.
and it wasn't, like, scary, like, jump scary, spooky, like the preview made it seem, it's much more ominous and it's really slow.
Yeah.
Which I had to think about it a lot before I decided that I liked it. Because it just wasn't what I was expecting.
Right.
If I hadn't seen a preview or, I mean, I probably wouldn't know that it was in the theater because I don't watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if I had just gone and seen it, I probably would be like, oh, yeah, that was great. And weird. It's very weird. But there are lots of deaths of children.
Yeah.
Like, all the kids die, and the parents go kind of crazy. So if you have problems with that in film, I would not recommend it, even if you like horror movies.
Yeah.
And if you're expecting it to be a straight up horror movie, that's not what it is. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the movie, it's not based on a real story, which is what I thought they were going to say. But they took excerpts from journals and like trials by the church and stuff, and
right.
they compile them into this. They kind of based the movie
set,
on them.
You know, maybe only a few decades prior to the Salem witch trials.
Yeah,
and you know this idea, like when they say witch, they really just mean bad things that you know reside in the human mind.
Yeah, but this is like literal witch.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's literal witch. Yeah. And there's weird animal stuff, too. Like,
oh, that, there's the goat.
The goat, being talked to as if it were the devil by there's a twin, a set of twins. There's a boy and a girl. And they're, like, talking to the goat called Black Phillip. And the goat's, like, acting crazy all the time. So there's really weird stuff happening at this farm. The corn harvest has gone bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's small and it's like moldy. They don't know what to do. They're having problems getting ready for winter. The family kind of, a lot of the movie is just about the family imploding on itself
yeah.
when all this stuff starts happening. So
yeah.
It's different. It's different than what you would think it would be if you just watched the preview.
Yeah.
But I liked it. Yeah, so I saw that. And then I watched Magic Mike because it's on HBO now.
I just saw that it was. I still haven't seen it.
It's totally silly. But Channing Tatum's a really good dancer,
yeah.
So that was really enjoyable. I mean, I could have just done with like 40 minutes of Channing Tatum dancing to various songs and left a plot out. And I never need to see Matthew McConaughey's butt ever. You see it once in the movie, never need to see it again. That was plenty. And he's totally gross and skeezy, but I feel like he's good at that.
He does that so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I mean, it is what it is. But I can't believe there's a third one. Like, they're doing Magic Mike XXL or something like that. Just
ridiculous.
Yeah. And I'm watching the show Les Revenants, The Return, which is a French TV show
mm-hmm.
that I watched the first season, I think early last year, and the second season's on Netflix now. And I'm going back and watching some of the episodes from season one because it's been a while, and it's still very good.
Good.
And the music is by Mogwai, and it's really good. Just like really enjoy it. But it's about a small town in France where some dead people from different times, so not all everyone from like 3 weeks ago who died, right, come back, but like a very select group of people come back from the dead. They don't remember anything that's happened, and the town kind of starts imploding on itself. I'm saying imploding.
I was gonna say that's
gonna
be the theme.
The community is like breaking down, and at the same time the town is next to a dam, and the water level in the dam starts dropping, and the water levels in the other part of the town start rising. So there's this like whole flood aspect, and there was a town that was on the other side of the dam, and the old dam broke and it flooded, and that's part of the story too. But that's not fully explained in the first season. So I'm hoping that like kind of comes through in the second season. So it's interesting. I like it. And the last thing I watched is a documentary called Dior and I that's on Netflix that is about the first haute couture collection that Raf Simons designs for the Christian Dior haute couture atelier. And it's good. He's a Belgian designer, and he designed for Jill Sander, which is like a menswear. He did like menswear, minimalist, modern suit stuff, and then goes to work for Christian Dior. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. But the interesting, like, the really cool part is that you get to see the atelier a lot, and they talk a lot to the two premiers. So the two women who are the head of the atelier, so the suiting and then the dresses. Mm-hmm. You get to, like, see all that stuff that's behind the scenes, which is really cool.
Did you see, you saw the Valentino doc, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they show, like, because there's a lot of that too with the, you know, like everything there is done by hand. So
yeah.
The women who,
so they're
there,
they're showing this guy like couch stitching like a lapel and like just trying to get this whole, and it's a very abbreviated time period where they're trying to do it like it should have been started 4 months before, but he just
Is it after Galliano got fired?
I think so. So he has like 8 weeks to put together his haute couture collection instead of like the 4 months. So it's half the time. And, you know, they're trying to figure out how they're going to work together and all that stuff. So, and it's on Netflix. You should watch it. Cool. That's really good.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
Whoa. That's it. Okay.
That's it.
You've got an announcement.
I've got a big announcement. I am starting a knitwear magazine. I've been working on it for about a year, and I'm working on it with Monica Kirby, who we've talked about before. She's one of my good knitting friends, and Andy Satterland, also one of my good knitting friends. Yeah, our...
And it is called?
It's called Stranded Magazine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The first issue will be out April 6th, I believe, is our release date. It's a digital magazine, my whole thing, and it comes with all the tutorials, patterns, articles, all that stuff, and I'm really excited.
Yay.
I'm kind of nervous about it. So we're going to be publishing 3 times a year, and the first issue is our warm weather issue, and they're based on weather instead of seasons, and there are, I believe, 6 patterns in the first issue. Yeah. And I'm the content coordinator, I should say that. So I'm the person who, like, coordinates everybody. I'm, like, the organized one, which is what I'm good at.
Yes.
So I do yarn support. I get yarn support and talk to designers and send out contracts and all that stuff. So if you're a designer or an indie dyer or a yarn store owner or like any of that kind of stuff, and you're interested in information, our website is strandedmag.com, and we have like some stuff up now, but not a lot because we're not released yet. Contact info is there if you're interested in submitting. We'll start doing open calls after the next issue. So I hope everyone checks it out. Nervous about it, but I'm really excited because I've been working on it for a year. That is that. And I'm not going to use the podcast. I told Jessica, I'm not going to use the podcast to like talk it up or anything. I just want to announce it. And then I'll just say when new issues are out. That's it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. All right,
that's
so,
it.
So show notes are at doublenet.net, and you can join us on our Ravelry group, which is Doublenet Podcast Fans. And until next time,
happy knitting.
Happy knitting.
Bye.
Bye.
I call your name, but you're not there. Was I to blame for being unfair? Don't you know I can't sleep at night since you've been gone? I never weep at night.
I can't go on.
Don't you know I can't take it?
You know I can't sleep at night, but just the same, I never weep at night. I call your name.
You know I can't take it.